ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Paul Feinbaum and Matt Barry.
It finally happened on a college football Saturday, on the final Saturday of September. Your Sunday tradition, Paul Feinbaum, Matt Barry, the ESPN College Football Podcast. Paul, good morning. These storm clouds have been circling for a few weeks, and it finally made landfall on the college football map yesterday with some of these upsets.
Yeah, Matt, you have to start with Clemson. They have shared the spotlight with Alabama really for since 2015, being in the playoffs every year and contending, and it's over now, and goodbye. And it was a hard landing. It was a crash landing, and it was a predictable landing, because really since the Georgia game a month ago, we've been talking about their issues, especially on the offensive line, DJ being shaky and not being Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, they kept willing their way through. And you knew this was a trap game, but you kept thinking to yourself, NC State, didn't they just lose to Mississippi State, which has lost to pretty much everyone now? And, I mean, what an epic game. I mean, at 7 o'clock last night, Matt, between that game, the end of the Arkansas game, and, of course, the game we all knew we would be watching the very last play on, and that was the Georgia State-Auburn game. It was an unbelievable 15 minutes of football.
Yeah, that 3:30 Eastern window, it was just absolutely nuts. And this happens every year. And it happens about 2 weeks a year where you look at the slate, and you're like, oh, this isn't that great of a slate. There's not that many games. And I'm one of the ones that I'll go, now hang on a second, because that's the weekend where weird things happen. It always happens in college football. Every single year, a less than desirable slate is going to provide you desirable outcomes. And Clemson was one of those teams that you always were. Look, you know how I feel about preseason rankings. I think they're absolute garbage. I think there are teams that were ranked inside the top 12 that got the number attached to their name because of last year. North Carolina was one of them. They already have two losses on the season. They're done. There are teams that always get the benefit of the doubt based on what they did the year before. Now, Clemson, you can take that one step further, Paul. They were getting a ranking based on what they've done for the past 5, 6, 7 years, and they deserved it based on some of the pieces they had coming back. But this team, you could see it from Georgia. You could see it against Georgia Tech. You could see that this was coming. And I had Dave Dorn on SportsCenter with me last week. I think it was on Thursday. You could just tell by the way that they were prepping and watching film. I don't know what happened at Mississippi State, and quite honestly, neither does Dave Dorn. But you could tell, Paul, coming into this game that they were like, you know what? We can go toe-to-toe with Clemson. And not only toe-to-toe with Clemson, we can beat them. And it showed.
They have come so close so many times. So 4 or 5 years ago, they had the game won until the final couple of seconds. And I mean, I happen to be friends with some NC State fans, and they just expect to lose. And I could just hear you, or you know, when the poor guy missed the chip shot field goal. That, I mean, I don't know what the odds makers put the chances of NC State winning at that moment, but they had to be close to zero. And that's what made it even more remarkable. And, yeah, I think the real question that has to be asked now is where does this Clemson program go? And I'm not suggesting the dynasty of the last 6 years is over, but if you're a 17-year-old about to make a commitment and you have all the usual suspects, you're looking at that program and it just doesn't look quite the same today, Matt. And I think it will be very interesting to watch this. You know, Dabo Swinney, for all of his charm, is a pretty lousy loser. Nobody wants to hear his whine. Nobody really wants to hear, you know, him say whatever he says. He's a good winner. Well, he's not even a good winner, but he's a terrible loser.
I have history with Clemson because obviously I lived and worked in Columbia, South Carolina. So while I was there in Columbia when Steve Spurrier was building South Carolina to a back-to-back-to-back 11-win team, which you could argue is one of the greatest coaching jobs in the history of the sport. You know Columbia well because SEC Nation was just there over the weekend. But we also covered Clemson and Tommy Bowden, and I was there when Tommy got shelved for this interim coach with a funny name named Dabo Swinney. So I've kind of seen the foundation of the program be built. And here's what, when they hit their sweet spot, Paul, here's what they always had. They went from Taj Boyd, who started the program on this national ascent and conference championships. He went and handed it off to Deshaun Watson, who at the time was the highest ranked recruit in Clemson history, who then handed it off to Trevor Lawrence. They both won national championships. They didn't skip a beat. And we thought and we think that DJ Uiagalelei is that next great quarterback. But we've seen something out of DJU, Paul, that we haven't seen out of those guys that I mentioned. I don't think any of them started slow. And I know DJU last year against Notre Dame, who went into Notre Dame Stadium, had all the passing yards, but they lost. I just don't know what happened to him. And that's why I'm with you in that. What now of Clemson, because they always had that next quarterback that just took the thing and ran, and then everything else just figured itself along the way.
We also just assume, because these guys are good in high school, that they will naturally be great in college. And even sometimes when we know they're good, Spencer Rattler, and we'll get to him later, weird things start to happen. But I really do think it starts at the offensive line position. And I heard Dabo a month ago saying, we are much better in the offensive line. I really like this offensive line. Well, if he likes that offensive line, he likes bad football because they can't block anything. And they're done for the season. It really just – I mean, it doesn't matter who's left because, you know, they'll go to a bowl game and Dabo can do the Dabo – he'll be sitting with Reese and the guys at the CFP. Guaranteed. I mean, he's already got that gig probably lined up, and good for him. He's had an amazing run, but the question now is, you know, it's not even him. It's that league. It's just so bad. And Mac Brown, our dear Sunday friend, just lays another egg when he's got to look back at the season and go, you know what? I had an opening. I could have done it. And he let it slip away a few weeks ago at Tech and another Tech. He let it slip away even worse.
Jeff Collins, they haven't won many games since he's been there. They're 2-2 on this year, but he's been close 2 weeks in a row, and he finally got that win against North Carolina. But when I'm looking at the ACC now, Paul, I would agree with you. Like, I'm sitting here looking at the standings, and your two undefeated teams in the ACC are Wake Forest. Dave Clawson's doing a remarkable job at Wake Forest, 4-0. And then Jeff Hafley in Boston College, who they beat Missouri on Saturday. Those are your undefeated ACC teams. And if BC or Wake were to run the table, I don't know. Like, look, there are, as we sit here Sunday morning taping this with Bloody Marys and coffee, there are two ranked teams in the ACC, both of which North Carolina is for sure going to be out. They're not going to be ranked. Clemson, 2-2, because they're a brand, they'll probably hang out in the top 25, maybe, maybe not. And then you're going to see, I think, NC State pop in there. You're going to see Wake Forest pop in there. And you're probably going to see Boston College potentially pop in there. But, Paul, right now, of the teams that are ranked, we sit here today and none of them are going to be ranked. The two that are ranked won't be.
No, BC's playing with a backup quarterback. And I give them credit. It may take months to get Eli Drinkwitz's foot out of his mouth after – opening up on not wanting to go to New England. We don't recruit up there. You know, how did we end up with this game? The AD who set the game up had just gotten fired, so he was kicking a dead body for those who don't follow Missouri football, which would include probably a great deal of you. But you're right. I mean, we can turn the page now because I think we'll leave it to our friends at the ACC Network to find something to talk about until Coach K's final season begins.
Yeah, then it's basketball season. Then they can get into their bracketology and all that. Because right now, the bracketology that matters in college football, it ain't happening for the ACC. We could get into Florida State again, but we won't. Maybe I'll save that for Herb Street tomorrow. As we continue to march down a Saturday that I said this was symptomatic of bigger things that we've seen. And the most surprising thing, and we would have to check the tape, but I believe I came on this here podcast a week ago and was very flattering and very excited about Arkansas football. And I thought that they could go in and beat Texas A&M. I was telling everybody who would listen because I watched enough Texas A&M. They just always happened to be on our studio to where I hadn't seen anything out of Texas A&M. And I didn't get hit on social media about Texas A&M and we're so off base, you know, nothing about their program. Well, I have eyes and eyes can tell you what's coming. And the second Zach Calzada started playing quarterback, you knew that Texas A&M was going to be in trouble. And now Arkansas 4-0 for the first time since 2003. And 20-10 doesn't sound like a beatdown, Paul, but that game was never in doubt. Maybe except for the after this Isaiah Spiller run, Arkansas is now a better team than Texas A&M. Arkansas.
No, they are, and I think it was hard to break away from A&M because we've just been ingrained in the hype, and that's really what it is. And I'm not beating up on Jimbo Fisher, who's a good coach, but who is he beating at Texas A&M? He beat Florida last year at home. I think it was a 1 or 2 point game, and he's had a couple of bowl wins. But this was the year they were going to beat Alabama, Matt. I mean, you heard it. I mean, I heard yeah. it every day on our show. You know, mark October 8th on your calendar. I've got it marked. Yeah, I mean, you can move them off. But the real question now is, you know, can Arkansas keep doing this? And I mean, fundamentally, they're really a strong team. Jefferson is banged up. You don't know what his condition is. And it's unfortunate for them that, you know, they don't have Auburn this week or Mississippi State, because at the apex of Arkansas, really in the last 10 years since Bobby Petrino got on a motorcycle and shattered the program, they're going to Georgia, and that is just not a good spot for them. I don't think. And I don't mean anything against the team. I think you know they'll compete, but it's a tough turnaround.
Yeah, and as I sit here and we're doing this, I'm watching a fantastic program on ESPNU called College Football Final.
Oh,
and we
let me flip.
We over. It's just a great program. Set your DVRs, whatever.
Even though I saw it, I've already seen it at 6 a.m. this morning. That's my normal watching.
I rely on you to get that early morning viewing. There are two viewings where the loyalists. I'm not calling you loyal, Paul. I'm calling you out of habit. But there's a 3 a.m. knowing of that show, which you would be stunned that number that thing gets at 3 a.m. Eastern. I think it's the West Coast crowd, but I digress. You look at Arkansas now, and we said it yesterday on the show. Everybody feels really good about Arkansas, as they should, because they said they're 4-0 for the first time since 2003 or four. But now they've got Georgia. Now they've got Ole Miss. Back-to-back road games at Georgia, at Oxford, and then Auburn. And so while we sit here saying Sam Pittman's doing a great job, and he is, Arkansas probably should find themselves in the top 12. They probably will. Paul, the next 2 weeks could bring this whole thing back to reality. They're not going to beat Georgia, and I don't even see them getting by Ole Miss.
No, I don't either right now. And I will tell you, though, and Matt, having been 2 weeks ago being out there, I mean, this is a program that was thinking about a good bowl game this year. So I don't think they're getting caught up, maybe as caught up as some of the media is. They were, what, I think 0-16 under Chad Morris. I mean, that win yesterday, coupled with the Texas win, is enough to feed them through the winter. I mean, those are critically important games. The Texas thing is traditional and part of great history. But A&M is a game that they have just blown every single year, or almost every year. So that was a major psychological barrier to get over.
For the first time since A&M joined the SEC 9 years ago, they lost to Arkansas. And they did it, and Arkansas got the win in front of Jerry Jones, who graciously allows his palace to be used for the old Southwest Conference rivalry. And it is good. And you know, we both like Sam Pittman. And to your point, here's what I love about fans. Obviously, it's short for fanatic, so they're going to tell you so many things about their team that you're like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, good work. But a lot of the times they know what they're talking about. But I'm with you in this one and that. I don't think Arkansas fans are sitting there saying we're going to the playoff or we're going to win the SEC West. What I think this does for the early part of the season is now you're starting to get recruits back in the door. You're starting to get recruits back into the facility. You're starting to be able to get into locker rooms. You're starting to be able to lean on that past that looks like it has a future. And in that respect, if you look now at the SEC West, Texas A&M, I've said it on this podcast. I've said it on television. If Jimbo Fisher doesn't have a quarterback, Jimbo Fisher doesn't have a chance. He just doesn't. And how Jimbo hasn't gone to the transfer portal to find one of these quarterbacks that he can plug and play is stunning that he hasn't done that. But take A&M out of the conversation in the West for this year. Ole Miss right there. They play Alabama next week. We're going to know a lot about them. LSU, I don't know. Arkansas, we're going to find out about them. And Auburn needed TJ Finley to escape Georgia State. And so, Paul, that side of the division in the SEC, there's a lot of we don't knows other than Alabama.
Yeah, I feel better with Auburn with TJ Finley, but I still feel pretty badly about them. I mean, they not only did they win on the final play, don't let the score confuse you because there was a pick six on a desperation last second pass.
Yeah,
but
I smoke.
There's reasonable. I'm still not sure how the officials allowed a third down conversion that would have probably put the game over. But that doesn't matter because we get bad calls every week. We're used to them. And it seems like Auburn always gets the good call. Arkansas last year, they literally stole a game, and they did it again. They may have done it again yesterday. But the point being, I think the Alabama-Ole Miss game is probably going to decide the West.
So do I.
Because, I mean, Ole Miss has a shot. And, you know, they have a coach who is not in – he's not behind – he's the only coach that I know of in the SEC that the game does not – you don't start the game at a disadvantage. I mean, he has Nick Saban kind of next to a voodoo doll and just keeps sticking pins in him. That's what gets him going. So I think it will be fascinating. I can't tell you I've really analyzed this game too much. I'll leave it to the experts. But it's potentially the shootout of the year in the SEC.
Well, and you hit on it, and they play next week, obviously in Tuscaloosa for one of the marquee games of the year. But you said it. I think half the battle with someone playing Alabama is a coach who doesn't care that Nick Saban's on the other sideline. And Ole Miss has that in Lane Kiffin. I think to some extent LSU had it when Ed Orgeron knew he had the better team. I think that was a one-year outlier with them knowing that they have the better team. But, yeah, Ole Miss, they're kind of hanging around. Lane Kiffin's got the best quarterback in the country, in my opinion. He should be the Heisman frontrunner because every other player you told me was a Heisman frontrunner.
Yeah, forgone.
Can't get out of there. Spencer Rattler was booed yesterday at home. They were begging for the backup to come in. That's how bad it's been for Spencer Rattler in the early part of Oklahoma's season, yet they just keep on winning.
Yeah, no, Oklahoma is easy because, Matt, we all bought in. Who's the best player in college football, best quarterback, Spencer Rattler? Why did we say that? Don't ask me why. We just say things because we need to
fill time.
Yeah, because we're talking about this stuff before we really see anything this year. But I don't want to go back a couple of weeks, but can we dig up all the pundits who had Iowa State going to the Final Four? Because we said goodbye to them early, but we'll say goodbye to them for good now. They're in the same car, or caboose, I should say, with Clemson right now.
Look at that conference as well, because there's something developing in the Big 12, because Oklahoma's, they're going to get beat. They're going to get beat.
They have Texas in 2 weeks.
They have that same thing that Clemson's been having. They have that same thing that A&M's been having. They had that same thing that I've seen out of these top teams that are like, you know what, man? If you're that good, don't give me this every week as hard. It is. But is it hard against Toledo? Is it hard against Nebraska? Is it hard against West Virginia? West Virginia's good, but if you're the third, fourth-ranked team in the country, you need a last-second field goal with the best – quarterback in the country.
Yeah, if that game had been in Morgantown, it would have made sense. But this is now twice that OU has nearly lost to an inferior team at home.
Can we go down this path for a minute? And I hesitate to do it, but I think you're the perfect person to do it with. And I've heard it discussed. We've even discussed it in my own studio on Saturdays with Jesse and Joey. It appears, again, we don't know this to be true, but it appears that those players who publicly promoted and were discussed with NIL, Spencer Rattler, face of NIL, DJ Uiagalelei, Dr. Pepper, face of NIL, Kayvon Thibodeau, injured, a little bit different, but Paul, is there something to this that the like now that they're 100,000aires and I don't know. It's just awfully coincidental to me.
And don't forget the first player I remember who signed a deal at 1201 was Bo Nix with Milo Sweet Tea. Wonder how that tea is going down right now as he's riding the bench. I mean, I just say this because we have never been down this road before. All the old timers, all the old high school and college coaches sitting around the coffee shop are just laughing because they predicted that this would be the undoing. And I'm not saying it's the undoing of college football, because yesterday was one of the most entertaining days we've ever had. But it may be having an effect. Matt, we'll leave it to sociologists and psychologists to explain. But you can't ignore it.
Right. I'll admit it. Come at me at social media. Do whatever you got to do. On the 14th anniversary, come at me. I'm a man. I'm 42. There's something, and I don't know what it is, but it just feels a little bit different with some of these guys that, by the way, Paul, pre-NIL played remarkably.
Well, I think you're going to start hearing more of that, and I think the Dabos of the world and the Lincoln Rileys, I mean, I don't know if they want to talk about it, but somebody's going to start talking about this. And Matt, the answer is we don't know. But we do know something's up, because this is, through 4 weeks, one of the most peculiar football seasons I have ever encountered. Now, you can't say it's post-COVID, although I've heard some people say that the COVID year, on top of a lot of programs not hitting at all in summer, has created, you know, bizarre play. But I don't know. There are a couple of teams that are playing pretty well. It doesn't seem to be affecting Arkansas. Doesn't seem to be affecting Alabama too much. I mean, there are some teams out there. Georgia seems perfectly normal. They've got NIL deals across the board.
Yeah, and anytime you get to play Vanderbilt and go 62-0 as Georgia did. By the way, they had double the amount of touchdowns that Vanderbilt had first downs.
Well, I'm really proud of Vanderbilt. They've got a new coach and a new era has begun there. They're spending money on facilities, and as we always say, after you walk out of the Commodore Stadium, same old Vanderbilt.
Clark Lee's gonna coach him up. Every weekend we talk about it. Like we talk about every year, like every time Vanderbilt plays, James Franklin's stock just goes through the roof.
That game should have been called after the first quarter. I mean,
they should actually start doing that.
Yeah. If that had been Pee-wee football, hey, it's over.
Hey guys, you know what? Either that or Georgia, put in everyone that you said wouldn't play this year so we can maybe make this thing a little bit interesting. We were touching on Oklahoma, Iowa State, and the Big 12 for a second, because Paul, now we believe, well, we don't believe, ACC is not going to have a playoff representative. They're just not. Wake Forest and Boston College aren't likely going to get that done. But now you look at the Big 12, Baylor undefeated, Oklahoma undefeated, Oklahoma State undefeated, Texas 3-1. They hung 70 on Saturday. And that's where that conversation starts and stops. And the beautiful thing about the Big 12, Paul, they got that round robin thing. Everybody's going to play. So they are a dog eat dog league, and you're going to know immediately who the best team in that conference is. And right now I'm not so sure Texas isn't 1A in that league behind Oklahoma.
They could be. And you know, at Texas, you know, they beat Oklahoma and all is right. That is not a game they have done very well in. So yeah, I mean, I think what we have to stop doing now, we won't do this, Matt, is just quit trying to pick the playoff every week, because, I was looking at ESPN.com today, and they had, you know, almost everyone had Penn State in the playoff. I'm like, going, take a look at their schedule. It's not really playoff friendly. But as far as the Big 12, could someone other than Oklahoma come out of there? Probably not. I think they're very likely going to be sitting home. And meanwhile, as they sit home during the playoffs, their commissioner, Bob Bowlesby, who was originally part of the 12-team playoff committee, I'm sure will be working against expansion to further his league, as one of the bigger unreported stories of the week continues to gnaw at me. But we really don't have to talk about that now.
I mean, Paul, this is your podcast with me. Like, if you want to talk about it, I'll I'll get a knife and fork out and claw that thing up a little bit.
No, no. I mean, really, there's nothing more to say, Matt, because it's the same thing we've said about college football for forever continues to hold true, that they literally can't stand success. I mean, we were all ready to make this thing fun and include 12 teams. Who probably did, by the way, who don't deserve to be in, but that's not really the issue. The NFL playoffs aren't really about worthiness. They're about great ratings.
No, it's about, hey, get in and play this thing off to see who wins. And it's funny you say that, because remember how annoying this offseason was? Because all we talked about was conference realignment, NIL, and playoff expansion. So we get to the season because everyone's like, oh, it's the same four teams. You got to let us. We know who the four are going to be right now. It's the same four teams. Well, as of yesterday, six more AP teams lost. That brings the total to 25 on the season, the most through the 4 weeks of the season in the poll era since 1936. So here we are talking about all of this expansion to make college football better. And, Paul, we're having a historic season based on top 25 teams getting upset, which is what I think college football needed. We needed a year where weird things were going to happen just to settle everybody down.
And Matt, I think this is right. But when the season began, I think Clemson may have been one percentage ahead of Alabama in the college football playoff predictor because of their schedule. And they're gone now before the month is over. I know we talked about it, and it will be talked about on every podcast this week, but it is still remarkable to think about because, Alabama had a much tougher road to the playoffs than Clemson did.
Yeah.
So it is all I'm saying to everybody out there who's consuming this, quit worrying about December. I had an A&M fan call me Friday, Matt, a Texas A&M fan, because even if we lose to Alabama, don't you think we can still get to the playoffs? Well, we don't have to worry about that question anymore, but that's how fans think.
I've been fighting. I fight the SportsCenter producers. I fight the people that I work with, that when they want to just dive into those playoff waters a little bit. Well, what does this mean for the playoff? And what about this? And what about that? I think the playoff discussion just needs to go away until November, because fact of the matter is, none of us know. We're pretty certain that Georgia and Alabama are the two best teams. But by the way, wouldn't this be a great year for the BCS?
It would be.
Like they would just spit out Alabama and Georgia and we get the game we all want. But the playoff talk needs to hush, at least for now, until we get us to Halloween, and then we can discuss everything going on with regards to the playoffs. So that puts a bow on week four. We typically don't peek ahead too much to the following week, but because of what we have coming in college football this next weekend, it really is a good schedule to say, okay, the SEC is going to be the conference next week. I know people will roll their eyes at that, but it's true. There's just so many good games. There's Arkansas, Georgia, there's Alabama. We're going to learn a lot about who a lot of people are, LSU, Auburn. I mean, Paul, this is one of those conference weeks that we've been waiting for, in that we could be sitting on this podcast a week from today saying Alabama went down, Ole Miss is a top five team, look at Arkansas. There's next week is really, really good.
Yeah, and as great as the SEC is, I want to be objective here. There are still tickets available. There are still tickets available for one SEC game, UConn at Vanderbilt. So let me know if anybody needs a section or a side of the stadium, because it's available. This is an intriguing week. I mean, I know nationally the Cincinnati Notre Dame game is as intriguing a game as there is, but it's hard to beat starting the day at noon with Georgia hosting Arkansas in a game that nobody saw coming. Absolutely nobody thought this would be anything other than let's just get the day started and flip over and see if Georgia's up by 14 points. That was a couple of weeks ago. But the reason why Alabama Ole Miss is so magical, we mentioned the coaches. You mentioned Matt Corral, but it's also Matt Corral and Bryce Young. And as Southern Cal continues to try to figure out, you know, what happened to its program, just watch this game and look at those two quarterbacks. What happened to your program.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that USC got pummeled by Oregon State late Saturday night. First time Oregon State's won at the Coliseum since 1960. But I remember, let me see if I can get my years right. I believe it was 2014, first year of the college football playoff. I'm hosting College Game Day Radio and Sports Center on the road. And we just happened to be in Tuscaloosa for number three, Alabama, taking on number one, Mississippi State. And it was the Dak Prescott team. And there are times where these schools from Mississippi will pop up and ruin everything. We saw Hugh Freeze do it to Alabama twice. This seems to be one of those games against Ole Miss. Alabama, just they don't like playing it because for whatever reason, Ole Miss just finds a way.
Yeah, I believe too, Matt, in 2014, at one poll, one week, I think Alabama, Mississippi State was one, and I think Ole Miss was two or three. I mean, they were both in the top three for a brief period of time. But go back a year ago, everyone fixated on the Florida game in Atlanta, but the game where Alabama was in serious danger of losing was the Ole Miss game, because Lane Kiffin came out and just threw the ball all over the field. The Alabama defense could not keep up with it. In the fourth quarter, Alabama finally had a stop or two, but it was a breathless game. And we said this last week about Dan Mullen. There was no question that Kiffin had outmaneuvered the master on the other side, and Alabama was breathless at the end of this game. But we didn't pay a lot of attention to it, because Ole Miss managed to just blow the season with a terrible outing by Matt Corral against Arkansas. They let a game get away at the end against Auburn and LSU. So we never really paid enough attention. But this Ole Miss team looks much more legit. Their defense is slowly getting better, and they're going to need that. But in a shootout, you have to wonder about Alabama, especially what we saw from that defense a week ago in the Swamp.
I'm gonna put you on the spot here. Because you're right. You hit it on the head. And it's such a good comment, because everyone in Southern California is like, well, we're USC. We're the land of Carson Palmer, Matt Leinart, Matt Barkley, Mark Sanchez, John David Booty. We get all JT Daniels at the time. We get all the super recruits. Well, guess what? Long Beach Poly's Matt Corral, Bryce Young. I think, is he a modern day kid? So you've got two of the best programs in the state of California high school playing on Saturday in the South. Do you believe if USC was like, you know what? Oh, Laney's grown up. He's getting all of our players. He's got Matt Corral. Lane, come on home. Do you think he would do it?
I heard from Lane after what I said here on this podcast a week ago. I don't want to say anything that would cause Lane any discomfort. And I've also heard from Ole Miss fans who are accusing me of trying to get Lane out of Oxford. That wasn't the question you asked me. You asked me, would Lane Kiffin take the job? I am going to lean on my legal fascination, my boyhood joy of reading. I know this sounds straight, constitutional law. I'm going to cite you a precedent. It was in 2010 when Lane Kiffin left the University of Tennessee for Southern Cal. Do I think he would leave Ole Miss for Southern Cal? Yes, I do. I think he would leave with regret, but using Lane's own past as helping me guide through the future, I think he would. And quite frankly, he would be crazy not to. It's a better job. It's a better job. You have to wonder about your ceiling at Ole Miss. It's a fun program. It's capable of getting to the top. Can it stay there as long as Nick Saban is around? And I just think Lane knows that there was unfinished business in SoCal.
They fired you on a tarmac after getting pummeled by Arizona State and Todd Graham. I believe it was Todd. They pummeled you. They fired you on a tarmac. I don't care what the job is or the money is. I'm going two fingers in the air and I'm not coming back. If I'm at ESPN and ESPN all of a sudden says, you know what? You've had a couple of bad shows. We work you 60 hours a week. We know you're like tired of this, but you, and they publicly embarrass me. And then I go to another network and all of a sudden, oh, look at Matt. Matt's doing his thing on another network. And it's really, and then ESPN comes crawling back and they say, you know what? Hey, come on back to the best sports network in the country. It's a better job. I'm saying no. You embarrassed me.
That's a good, I'm glad you said that, because there's currently a guy working at ESPN who's only the highest paid employee. And that's exactly what happened. They fired him. He left. He was embarrassed.
As Stephen A, they did.
And he came back.
Max Kellerman came back too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This just in. And the point. So I don't know. I mean, I'm just giving an opinion early on a Sunday morning. And we'll give Lane a chance to, if Lane thinks I'm wrong, he's welcome to publicly say this week that I would not accept their phone call. I will not go back. I love it at the Grove. I love being at Ole Miss. And I know he does, and he's done a fine job. I'm just saying that he believes, and you know him, Matt, that he never got a fair shake there. The program was on probation. There were things going against him. Pat Hayden was the AD. They overreacted, and the program has not been the same since. I think there's that temptation to go back and say, hey, look at now, you know, look at me now. How do you like, what's that Toby Keith song? How do you like me now? Most people would think like you. Lane doesn't think the way normal people think.
And there's a different regime, different administration, so they could beg and plead and say, hey, look, that we wouldn't have made this dumb decision. But, Paul, when you look nationally, look at what Sark's do. Sark's gone to the Nick Saban School of Rehab for Coaches, as has Lane. Sark had Texas scoring 70 on Saturday. Lane Kiffin has the Heisman Trophy favorite right now, one of them. USC lost to Oregon State, and they've got two of their former coaches who at the time we admit didn't exactly act appropriately or have the right outcomes. They're now two of the better coaches in the country based on their current situation. One of them, you could argue, one of the top five jobs in the country.
By the way, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's no argument. I'm just giving you a gut reaction. So while Lane was off last week, do you know where he was on Friday? He was in Southern California recruiting. So I mean, he is very popular in that area. And I'm not suggesting that he was there doing anything other than recruiting, but I think it's a long shot, Matt. You didn't ask me if I think he'll end up being the head coach there. You asked me whether I thought he would accept it, and I'm you know. You know, come at me. That's fine. But I'm just, Lane Kiffin is not a conventional thinker. You know that.
I do. And I do know that Paul's radio program, even going way back when, he is the land of listeners that track private plane tail numbers during coaching searches. So if someone's going to sniff this out, it'll be a Paul Feinbaum listener. And that's why your people can sleuth better than anyone. Let's get out of here on this one. For those of you that go back on the Sunday morning sports centers yesteryear, it was Matt and Paul, and we did this segment called Poly Positive, which literally hit the nation by storm. It was one of those popular segments in sports center history. And during that year, it was obvious that Paul has a love of Brian Kelly. And I find it appropriate, Paul. I find it appropriate to end on this. With all of your love of Brian Kelly, can you believe as of Sunday morning, September 26, 2021, Brian Kelly is now the winningest coach in Notre Dame history?
Now, when I saw the picture of him with Newt Rockne and Era and so many other great coaches, but I will say this, Matt. And I've had my problems with Brian Kelly, but I do appreciate the fact that he has withstood the test of time. There there are a few places, if any place, tougher to win a title because he hasn't done that, but to maintain that, that's a pressure cooker. That's a suffocating job because of the greatness of that name. So I have come to really respect him, and I would have a difficult time on the couch this morning if we were still there. And by the way, that I don't think people appreciate those 15 or 16 episodes to do live acting, the two of us, without a script on national television. I mean, forget Saturday Night Live. That episode should have won an Emmy.
Paul, that was first of all, it's the highest rated sports center in the building. That hour of Sunday that we were doing that leading into NFL Countdown. You're right. We went no script. We went for, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do for the good listeners of the podcast. I'm going to dig a couple of those up and I'm just going to post them throughout the week just for posterity's sake. So those who have missed Pauly Positive, I'll get you hooked up. But like Brian Kelly, and I said this yesterday and I'll say it again, you're right, he hasn't won a national championship, Paul, but to do what he has done at Notre Dame in becoming the winningest coach of all time and not winning a national championship and going through an academic scandal and somehow finding a way to appease one of the hardest university and fan bases in the country in this day and age, when you get fired after 2 years, just ask Willie Taggart, maybe some coaches on their way out this year. It is one of the most remarkable coaching jobs we've seen in the last 25 years.
And I'm not ruling them out this year for the playoffs. This is probably going to be their most challenging task. I mean, they made Wisconsin into a ragdoll on Saturday, and you know they have a lot of name games left on the calendar, like USC and Stanford. I think they're looking pretty good right now.
Anybody who is into point spreads, you'll find Vegas obviously on a bender and just making a mistake. How Notre Dame was a 6.5-point dog to Wisconsin at a neutral site was laughable. They were the better team. They had more talent coming in. I mean, they were just better, and they got beat. Wisconsin got beat with Drew Pine.
How many times have we all fallen for Wisconsin?
All the time.
Yeah, it's a rite of autumn. But yeah, I mean, as you look at Notre Dame, I mean, Brian Kelly, he beats Cincinnati, and Matt, he's already gotten through a couple of pretty tough encounters. That would be amazing to see him sneak into the playoffs this year again.
Who, by the way, we talk about Wisconsin. They've got Michigan next week, so they could wreck the whole Big Ten if they wanted to. That just means that we're turning the page to October. Paul, what a fun September. Give me something. You know, I like big picture thoughts out of you. Give me something now that September has moved upon us or after us in college football. Give me something in October to keep an eye on.
I'm watching Jim Harbaugh because he is a figure that has been easy to beat up on, and I've taken my swings because they're free. I mean, just here's Jim Harbaugh. Come throw a ball at him and knock his head off. And Michigan had to hang on yesterday against. A very good Rutgers program by Rutgers standards, but they are going to be in some really big games. The Big Ten is going to be we obsessed over the SEC, but the Big Ten is going to be maybe the most entertaining conference to watch the next couple of weeks.
Michigan undefeated. Ohio State woke up. They had a bizarre situation with a player quitting at halftime. They got past Akron, which we expected they would.
I've done that at ESPN before.
So I'm with you. The Big Ten is going to be so fun to watch. September did not disappoint. We cannot wait to take you on this journey with us through October and through November. And a reminder, ESPN's College Football Podcast, 5 days a week. So make sure to rate, review, and follow so you don't miss a thing. And if fantasy football is your thing, make sure to check out the Fantasy Focused Football Podcast. Nobody wants to lose their fantasy league, so listen to make sure you know everything you need to know. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Paul, I really appreciate this every Sunday with you. It's my therapy after getting no sleep. And we hope everybody enjoyed the September edition as we turn the page to October. Paul, good stuff. Looking forward to next Sunday already.
Can't wait, Matt. Thanks.
And for those of you who want to see Pauly Positive, I'm telling you, I'm going to my other laptop where the archives are stored. You will see a Pauly Positive on social media today, I promise.